Welcome back to Soulful Conversations, and this week we have the amazing Kim Churchill. This was yet another really enjoyable, soulful conversation for me. I've known Kim for a long time, and we were talking afterwards, and I think one of the first professional gigs he ever did was when he supported me when I came down to the South Coast, to his area way down on the South Coast of New South Wales, and the whole community lobbied for me to get this kid on the gig at the last minute, and I ended up slinging the guy a gig, and he absolutely killed it. He ended up having a jam with me on harmonica, and then just took off from there and just kept going from strength to strength, to the point where he's absolutely been world beating and slaying it. And it is so amazingly deserved. What an amazing guitarist, absolutely amazing guitarist, and great songwriter and singer and multi-instrumentalist. And he really took the old foot percussion thing that myself and Xavier Rudd before me and many others have done, but he was part of a new generation doing that and taking it to a new level. And it was just really amazing to see, and he's just killed it. So it's really good after all these years to finally have a chance to really sit down and catch up. And this is just one of the things I'm just really loving about Soulful Conversations. In this podcast, we interview inspiring and amazing people, musicians, surfers, and experts in mindset, creativity, health, well-being, and making the world a better place. I'm tired of beating around the bush. I want to go deep and have a soulful conversation.
This podcast is brought to you by Earth Bottles. At Earth Bottles, we are on a mission to end single-use plastics, offering a full range of beautiful double-insulated bottles, reusable coffee cups, food and tea canisters, stainless steel straws, bags, and lots of plastic-free eco-goodies. Earth Bottles proudly supports the Breast Cancer Network of Australia, Beyond Blue, Hope for Health, Clean Coast Collective, 15 Trees, Bali Baby House, and the UN Refugee Agency. So head over to www.earthbottles.com.au for a 10% discount using the promo code ASHLOVESME. Together, we can make a change and break up with single-use plastics.
Here we are, Soulful Conversations at Kim Churchill's house with his whole audio setup. We've got a lovely condenser mic set up here because I forgot some important cables. How are you going, Kim? One fucking connector. I hate you, Apple.
Yeah, I hate them too.
Yeah.
That can be the start of our podcast. Yes, hatred.
We were aiming for happiness and gratitude and all this, but yeah, we hate Apple.
We're beginning with hatred. We're working our way up.
Yeah.
It's a builder.
The only way is up from here. Great pad you got here, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really nice. So I walked into the living room there and I saw your beautiful scroll that you had going there. And I tried to read it for a split second but couldn't read a thing. But that works really well because you don't really want people to read it because it was your gratitude journal?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. So what's the deal with that?
Well, I discovered at some point, I guess, the importance of, just being grateful for stuff. And I kind of divide the page up into half grateful, half hopeful, which is sort of nice as well. Basically, like, some friends of mine that I used to live with in Lennox Head used to, like, kind of had a bit of that Byron trippy hippie stuff going on, and they would like get us all to hold hands, and we'd each say like one thing we were grateful for and one thing we were hopeful for.
Wow.
And it was kind of beautiful, and it resonated with me. It just made me feel that that was like a 2 to 5 minute time where everybody just felt good, and then like it was undeniable the change in the mood and the atmosphere of the place after it had happened.
Wow. So when did you do that?
Just before we ate meals.
Right.
So it's kind
like
of a grace.
Yeah.
It's kind of a grace thing. Yeah. And it stuck with me. Like it then I would just get exhausted on tour and negative, and I would work myself up about all kinds of ridiculous little things that I'd created importance around, but they weren't actually important.
Right.
And the gratitude journal helped anchor me in like, oh, there's all these great things that are happening every day. And then there are things, and then it's nice to have a little kind of window shop in your future, you know, which is the hopeful for part, which can be anything. Like I love like silly little things, like, you know, to bump into an old friend, or like to tell a funny joke that everybody thinks is hilarious, or like silly yeah, like silly little things like that. And then sometimes I do read it back like a week later, and little things freak me out that I wrote down, that I'm like, oh, that fully happened. And
well, because you put something quite random in there.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it came to pass.
And then it came to pass. Yeah. And maybe that's just my consciousness latching on to an event that I can kind of mold to fit the thing that I was hopeful for, because I like the, you know, serendipity of that coming true. But either way, all of those emotional processes are good for me. And so I started doing it more and more, and it anchors me. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm getting really anxious and getting into some weird moods. I'm like, well, I haven't got out my gratitude journal for 2 or 3 days.
I think it's an amazing thing. I've been doing that for about a year, and I think especially I can imagine really blokey blokes listening to this going, wankers with their gratitude journal.
Yeah, they probably also struggle with anxiety.
Yeah. They're really grumpy and hate the world,
and they still can't figure out why 10 pints doesn't fix it.
Yeah, exactly. But I, you know, I've done a lot of writing on this and stuff as well recently, and it's like, what's the point of good things even happening? You know, if you're not grateful for them,
exactly. Yeah,
it's like they're wasted.
Yeah,
and like I feel like in my career, especially at different stages, like the really exciting stages when like everything's exploding and whatever, I wanted to sort of almost like be humble with it, and you know, like just go, yep, cool, okay, what's next?
Wild, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, I'm just going to keep working hard.
Yeah,
but then there's sort of a little bit of an ungratefulness there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you. Well, it was another reason that I started was because, yeah, I mean, careers in the music industry go up and down and up and down, or they go up really, really fast and then they go down really, really fast, and I think that it's pretty difficult to find a way to accept all of the good stuff, because you can tell deep down, you're like, I shouldn't get carried away with winning an award or selling out a big room or something. And you kind of should a little bit. Like, you should get carried away.
It's a subtle thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Or you could be, and it could be great. And I agree with you. Like, if you don't take that time to be grateful for stuff, then you may well look back from a future point where you don't have that, whatever it is, and kind of wish that you'd, you know, sort of got your stoke on a little bit harder for whatever it is, you know, great waves or like a better physical condition or whatever it is. And gratitude, I think, helps with that as you move forward.
It almost guarantees a better life in that sense. Yeah. Like, say you're on if you were on a surf trip and you had that, and every night you rode in it, or every morning on some boat trip in the Mentawais or something, I mean, you would just be so appreciative of it. It's like those good times, it's one of the cruel things. Like, if you're having a ball, it does run out. And, yeah, what is your life? what is your life but the collection of experiences, and the only way that they come in is through your eyes and your sense of touch and whatever. Yeah. So yeah. You're the one who interprets it. You're the one who decides how good or bad or otherwise it is. And if you're spending it all just not being grateful, you won't have the experience that you could otherwise have.
Yeah, yeah. And I was talking to a guy out on the surf this morning, because the surf was kind of crummy this morning, and we were all a bit frustrated because it was pumping yesterday. And we were talking about, we're like, is it that bad? Like, I went in and some mates were having a coffee at the kiosk, and they're like, oh man, you're getting some great ones. I was like, interesting. Like, I was out there being all shitty about it. And yeah, like, I think that you kind of get caught up in the good stuff, and then you compare something that's not as good to something that was good, and that comparison leads you away from gratitude for whatever it is. And yeah, it was just an interesting kind of physical moment where I was experiencing exactly what we're talking about, which is like, you make it what you want. You know, it is your reaction and your attitude to the things around you that mainly kind of put into place what that experience is. And like, my surf this morning could have been this shitty frustrated surf, or it could be this thing of like, I got a few waves, a mate's in town that hasn't been here for a while, we had a coffee, we had a surf, we're keeping fit, we're in the ocean, there was some dolphins swimming by, like what a great thing. And and so that's gratitude right there, is me looking at that event slightly differently as I did a few hours ago or whatever. And I think that runs through your entire existence, like your relationships, your mental health, your career, your everything is literally your attitude towards it, really.
It is, yeah. It so is. I mean, that ingratitude, it's shown in the surf. I know exactly what you mean. I've had that too, and I've thought to myself, like, especially I just came off the back of living in Bali.
Yeah.
And I had a beautiful surf at Crescent today.
Yeah.
But like, there were so many times in Bali I came in going, ah, that was pretty shitty. Or I was out there saying it was shit.
Yeah.
And it was pumping, really. Yeah. And other people be like, they're on holidays, they're going, it's pumping, isn't it? And I'm like, whenever I heard somebody say that, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just kooking this attitude wise. Yeah. I'm not living well right now if I'm being that guy.
But it's quite contextual as well, I think. Like, you know, in the same way that if you have a month off drinking, like, you can go out and have some big nights and, like, you feel great the next day. Or you might immediately feel really hungover because your body's poisoned and it's not used to it. But, like, I find, like, I have a month off drinking and then for, like, a week or something, I can go out and have some great nights and bounce back and feel great. And I think it's similar, like, once you have... But then, yeah, to go on with that, like, if you're drinking all the time, it'll start wearing you down and you won't feel those joyous effects and you'll wake up fatigued and anxious and hungover and all of that kind of crap. I think it's the same with surf, the same with anything, like, same with sold-out shows, you know, it's a wonderful example that we could both relate to is, like, you get used to things and like, on a career level, I've begun to notice, like, it doesn't matter if there's 5 people or 50 people or 5,000 people or whatever, like, the feeling of a room not being sold out and a room being sold out is the same. And it gets, and so like, if you get something all the time, it becomes more and more difficult to be grateful for it, because, you know, your attention is waning, like, your attention span is waning because you have it all the time. And yeah, I think gratitude is kind of a muscle, really. And the more good stuff you have on a regular basis, like, you're surfing pumping reefs every day, like, the more difficult and more likely it is that you lapse into a kind of a, oh, it's not that good today or whatever. And then it takes that muscle and exercising that muscle to maintain your gratitude and your happiness. And I guess you can feed off other people as well. Like, did you find you were feeding off stoked holiday makers, or did they just piss you off even more?
No, they were great. They were great. They reminded me.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're so right. Like, what we all have to fight against, and, you know, people who are listening to this, they might not be musicians or they might not be surfers, but we all have this. There's a terrible thing. Like, humans are made to strive. And
yeah, yeah.
We're happy when we're striving.
Yeah.
but the attainment of what we're striving for is the harder thing to adjust to.
Yeah, exactly. Feels like stagnation almost.
Because we're not really wired for contentment.
Yeah.
And, you know, we, like you pointed out so well, we normalize anything.
Yeah.
So, like, anyone in, for example, or a music career, talking about how many numbers at your show or whatever, there's really no level that you couldn't adjust to
and get used to.
That would just be normal, and then it's just a normal day.
Yeah, and then your levels of happiness and joy and calmness and contentness are just as malleable and will flow just as quickly.
Yeah, it's a day at the office.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's... I find, like, I've been thinking more and more about it, like, humans have the most incredible ability to cope, and then the most incredible ability to like... What's the opposite? Like, to just get used to things and become, like, you know, if we're given an inch, we'll take a mile, you know.
That is classic. I've never looked at it like that, but that is so true. It's like, give us a hurdle, we're great.
Yeah,
but
awesome.
We do not, we are not wired to deal with abundance.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think, you know, maybe... I mean, you said some things better than I could say also about your generation, saying people are more depressed now and stuff.
I was about to bring that up.
I think it's the abundance and the lack of hardship.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, when we're not shoveling shit.
Yes.
In the field. So we're like, oh, why do we feel so unhappy? Like, we get this existential fear and worry about, like, what can we do with all of this opportunity and stuff? Mm. And, yeah, most of my generation are still just bumbling around Central America with no shoes, doing lines of cocaine and trying to figure out why they're unhappy. No, actually, they're having a great time doing it. But it's I think our generation kind of, we have this new, like...
What's your generation? What's your age? Let's put, for context, loonies out there who haven't heard of Kim Churchill, the quick, because I didn't even introduce you. Well, I'll introduce you later, actually, I'll back to that, but you're 28, right?
I'm 28, yeah. So, I don't know, what's that, a millennial? No, younger. No, the older one, a letter. Anyway, yeah. I think that, like, back in the whatever it was after World War II, they started generating from a child. You didn't just go child to adult. You had this new thing called a teenager.
Yeah.
And now we have not named it yet, but there's this other phase before adult, which is like, you finish school, uni's a joke. You're probably not going to get work out of it anyway. Like,
accrue a lot of debt.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the idea of university, at least what I know of it in Australia, it can be a way of prolonging your adulthood as much as a trip to Mexico. And so we have this time from like 18, 19 to, God, like to 30. It can go to 30, I think. Like, a lot of my friends who are turning 30 now are kind of going like, oh my God, like...
What am I going to do?
When do I become an adult? You know, and I don't know if that's the thing that's always happened to humans, or if that's a new thing, but I definitely feel there's...
It's a new thing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, there's this... Yeah, because when you're like 16 and you're working and you're going to get married and you're like, I'm an adult.
Yeah. I've got a kid.
Yeah. Fucking married. I'm shoveling hay every day to support my family. I'm an adult.
Yeah.
You know, but these days we're like, oh man, what's going on? You know, like, and I think that that's a good example of our lack of ability to handle abundance.
Yeah.
Oh, we have all of this wonderful time. We don't have to grow up so quick. Humans are living longer, so we don't have to knuckle down and have children and get all this stuff done. Mm. And we're kind of learning that that's not necessarily the way our generation want to move anyway. There's so many fucking humans on the planet that we don't even know whether having children is a wise decision anymore, you know? And with the environmental issues that are coming about and becoming more and more prevalent and more discussed, we're like, what kind of a world are we bringing kids into anyway? So all of that is put aside, and now we just have us, little old us, in the middle of it all, kind of trying to make ourselves happy. Mm. And we have all of this opportunity and all of this time. And and the result is like just a different kind of struggle, which is an existential struggle of what the hell am I meant to do? Mummy and Daddy told me I could be anything.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a good example of how we trip over abundance. And
so what are some of the I was just trying to workshop in my head, what's the way out of that little crisis? And I know one easy way out of that is actually if hardship is enforced upon you, and it can be any kind of hardship. Yeah. But if you get to a level of despair or hardship, be it physical or emotional, I think you can come out the other side of that with appreciation and happiness.
Yeah.
But what would be a way, in your opinion, of not having to go through all that and coming out the other side?
I think just to accept. Well, gratitude, in a way, you know, you can't do anything about where you were born, what kind of society you were born into, what your cultural conditionings are, all of the privileges that you may or may not have. You can't do much about that, but you can choose to kind of curb and work on your attitude towards it all. And I think, for our generation especially, we're going to have all of this time and all of this opportunity, and it's probably going to make us unhappy. And that's okay. That's part of it. We can still fill our lives with amazing things and do amazing things and work hard. We can coexist alongside a little bit of existential angst about what the hell we're meant to be doing. And we can learn how to be fucking grateful for the incredible amount of opportunity that we are given as our generation, whichever one we are, X or Y or millennials or something, you know, silly terms anyway. But I think that the answer is to work hard on maintaining a grateful attitude and filling our lives, because we have the opportunity to. I mean, it's probably why our great-great-grandparents were shoveling shit and fighting in wars and stuff, was so that we could have the kind of opportunities that, you know, and I'm speaking as a 28-year-old white man from Australia, you know. I'm very lucky. I'm the most lucky.
Yeah.
Pretty much the most privileged kind of, you know, person there is.
Mm.
And I think what I need to do is work hard at being grateful and filling my life with reasonable things that do good and that help other people that don't have opportunities I do to have them. And and that's the answer to, at least that's the answer to the weird existential angst that our generation have about what the hell do we do, you know, because you do that, and I'm not saying that I'm great at it or anything, but you feel those little things you can do, and they make you feel like you're making the most of your opportunity for little moments. And I think that finding those things and doing them is the answer somehow. Mm. You know.
Yeah, I think you raise a really great point there, and you have done a lot to help the environment and other people, and I think that's what that is the, if I was going to look at a solution that is external for people who are feeling these angst and depression.
Yeah.
I wrote a song about this years ago called Give Something Away, but it's like the best way is to shift the emphasis off yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because those people who are shoveling that shit, they weren't actually... It gets... If you are in a time of hardship, if you just sit around just thinking about yourself and poor you, you sort of perish.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah,
stop
yeah.
just thinking about yourself.
It's a dumb move.
Yeah. And you say, all right, you take the stoic attitude and, okay, you know, others are like this as well, and let's get on with the job kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the stoic approach. But, in the absence of the need for the stoic approach, then I think... It comes down to sort of generosity and social mindedness to give to other people. And the little hack there, that the thing that's in it for yourself that people might not realize, there's a little hack there. you take all of the emphasis off yourself.
Yeah.
There's a terrible burden to just be thinking about yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize that it's mentally taxing to think about yourself all the
time. It's a highway to guilt.
Yeah, and when you fall into... when you're falling into negativity, anxiety, depression and stuff, you're thinking about yourself a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
When shift the focus onto other people and not what other people have done to you.
Yeah, exactly.
But
how you
can help other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then, as I say, that little hack of that is that you're not thinking about yourself.
Yeah.
And you get a break from that asshole.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. There's a contentment in, I wrote a song about it too.
Cool.
Yeah. Window to the Sky was a song about cleaning up my friend's house when I was depressed and feeling the best I had in weeks because I did my friend's dishes and I was thinking about the fact that my friend would be stoked when he got home. And it's like stopping to think about yourself has that little hack in it, you know.
We should put that in can we put that in the podcast a little bit?
Oh yeah, totally.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's you can't do it for the contentment you get out of not thinking about yourself, but that is I've found anyway, that's the most rewarding way to spend time.
that song.
Yep.
Entitled
Window to the Sky.
Window to the Sky. So what does music, well, let me just make it as broad as I can. What does music mean for you?
For me personally, it's become an opportunity to creatively channel and express everything I experience, everything I feel, and everything I learn in my life, to channel and express that in a way that obviously, you know, makes me money and is a job that I can do, but is also sort of a small thing I can offer to other people in terms of them understanding their own journey and maybe drawing likenesses and hearing me talk about things that maybe help them in some way.
I love that. I try and do a similar thing.
Yeah.
In my music. And it's always a challenge, because do you ever have that thing where you think, am I getting to... That sounds like a great... That last song that we just heard. But your description of it to me, that sounds like a really clever way of doing it and a really good way of just telling the story of that. I wonder... I mean, I have a tendency... I think I'm naturally a preacher.
Yeah, gotcha.
I was a preacher in the last life. So I preach sometimes, maybe too much. Do you ever worry about that, or you...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do. And I think it's like a... I noticed for me it was kind of something I was doing through, like, I guess, like, in a kind of a nice sort of cute naive way, like, I've learnt this lesson, everybody must learn from me, you know what I mean? But
yeah
over time I've sort of started to learn that if I can just express the things I've learned for me, it's your own
journey.
Yeah, more of the Neil Young approach than the Bob Dylan approach, I guess. You know, just finding ways to express my feelings and hoping that there's some kind of lesson in there. And often I find, like, the lyrics and the moments of music that I'm most proud of don't come from any kind of cognitive understanding of a lesson learnt or a kind of a skill attained or anything. It's kind of an obscure sort of semi-dreamlike thing that I don't understand where it came from or how I did it.
The channeling.
Yeah, but the one line came from somewhere that I don't understand and perfectly communicated a much deeper, more important lesson in my life that I wasn't even fully conscious of. You know, there's a lyric in a song that I've released recently, which is "Sometimes I Try Too Hard to Be Something."
Yeah, right.
And that was just such a case of, like, I would have never been able to sit down and write that cognitively. As a lyric, it's not much going on, really. Mm. But it anchored probably 30 songs of mine down to a lesson and something that I learned. And so I try to allow my lyrics, especially, but my music to come from an emotive kind of flow, you know, that sort of flow, that creative flow where you're not thinking. It doesn't get very preachy in that world because I don't think I was a preacher in another life. I don't think I have the command to be able to preach things to people. Mm. You know, I think I need to just...
Lucky you.
Yeah, I think I need to just quietly sort of... quietly talk about my own experiences and allow people to grab something from that.
It's really interesting. It's really subtle, that thing of allowing.
Yeah.
It's that idea of channeling. And then if people listening to this podcast think we're getting too hippie-ish right now, I would remind you that the way that we are talking about these things, whether they be literally like a spirit moving through you and just it's coming from the ether and you're channeling, or whether that be a metaphor that's allowing that's helping you to get in touch with a deeper part of yourself and
either way
still flow. Yeah. Either way, it still works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even if it's just psychological. A lot of the spiritual stuff that you know, spiritual stuff that 5 or 6 years ago I was getting really tripping on and getting high on. I've noticed that the core of it is really just psychology anyway.
Yeah.
And it's a similar thing. Yeah, it's yeah, it can just be a metaphor. The whole, oh, the spirit of the song is channeling through me from the universe. You know, that's a very wanky way of saying I'm working from the creative side of my brain. You know, the side of my brain that's like a child drawing with chalk in the concrete that doesn't give a damn about the picture.
I'm in flow state. It's been defined.
Yeah, exactly. It has now, hasn't it? Yeah.
But you like, but you give yourself permission if it has been defined by science. But it's funny that the wanky or the hippie or the esoteric, we're at a stage where that sort of stuff sort of seems to lead the charge. And if you were, if you just went with the wanky version and just gave it your all, it would, it leads to a more profound, a very profound result.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff we're talking about now because, like, I feel like I have a certain intuition that I need to trust with that kind of thing. If somebody starts talking to me about going to a psychic or having somebody talk to their dead relatives or something, my intuition tells me that that's bogus. And I need to trust my intuition whether it's right or wrong. But when somebody comes to me and says, oh, I've been manifesting things with my thoughts, you know, I know a lot of people would think that's bogus, but my intuition tells me that there's something in the way consciousness works where your thoughts and your attitude and your understanding that you've created in your mind for what your experiences are leads to more of that similar understanding and that similar attitude, and the events, whether that it's your perception of them or them themselves, begin to all have this positive kind of, you know, thing. So like, but it's interesting because like, if I start thinking about it, I'm like, oh God, what trippy, hippie, wacky thing am I accidentally going to fall into, you know? We've got to trust our intuition on that.
Well, it's so funny for me. Like, I still have to use bravery when I'm speaking right now because I'm imagining somebody listening to this, and I know that how some people react to words like manifesting your destiny or your dreams or whatever.
It's their problem.
But let me, it's their problem. So let me just define a term here because I agree with you 100%. And I've experienced that in the last year to 18 months in a big way. And previous to that I would have probably disagreed and made fun of you. And but I had you know, and also to just get on a sidetrack, I had cause to interview a few people and ask them about this with my book, which was on surfing musicians, which makes me feel really guilty being right in front of you right now. That I
it was my interview, Ash.
But where did I get with that? Yeah, you're gonna have to be in round two. I was talking to Steph Gilmore.
Oh, you have to talk about, to some cool people.
But I didn't ask Slater about this kind of thing. But I asked him different things. But I asked Steph about, I had been getting into that sort of manifesty stuff. I was reading a lot of Wayne Dyer and a few different people like that who talk about those kind of things. But a million people talk about it. And just about, and I had come to the conclusion, you know, I don't care if scientifically this is this, that, or the other thing. I care whether it helps me.
Life.
And I asked Steph about it, and I sort of almost guiltily brought it up at the end, you know. Well, do you think you can... and I sort of prefaced it saying, oh, this is where sports science crosses over with a bit of spirituality and... you know, do you think you can manifest, you know, your dreams? Or, you know? And she's like, 100%. 100%. I use that all the time. I've used it my whole life. And Kelly has used it to a way deeper level than anyone, you know, sort of knows. Or he was using it way back when no one ever thought that way and getting cosmic with it. And you think, well, then Steph went off and won another world title after that discussion. It seems to be working for some people.
I think if you believe it works, probably does, you know. And and like I read this other really interesting book a few years ago. The whole manifestation thing, I've gone through it. You know, I've had my time of like, you know, fluttering off in the universe thinking that I can just make all of my hopes and dreams come true and I can manifest. I've experienced it fucking working to the point of like real physical moments of like, I cannot believe that just happened. That is scaring me. But also I think that I haven't put it aside because I think it's there and it's useful and whatever, but consider like you see this house as this wonderful, you know, kind of overdone expression of like, oh, so you see this house and you love this house and you want to live in this house and one day it's going to be your house and you're manifesting it and you cut out a photo of it and you put it on fucking vision board and you just dream of this house and you make it come true and you live in that house. What if the person that owned that house before was an old lady who fell down the stairs and broke her leg and had to move into a retirement village 10 years ahead of what she might have otherwise? And what if you just manifested that because you like, wanted that house? You know what I mean?
So be careful what you manifest.
A little bit, yeah. Like it's an interesting concept, but it's like whether you believe it or not, it's still in its essence, if you're using it to get what you want, it's still potentially getting in the way of what other people want. And going back to what we were saying before, thinking intensely about yourself.
Yeah.
Which will always have a kind of a... which will always lead you away from that contentment. Mm-hmm. And there was this great book about it, which is like, just remain open to the right things coming into your life. Mm. And I think openness is a much better approach than like manifesting what you want. It's like being open and giving the space and having a little bit of positive kind of attitude towards those things being available. And that's kind of where I'm at now, which I really, really like. There's less of a drive to get and to win and to attain and to succeed, you know. And that makes me feel a little bit better when I go to sleep at night.
It's like you have to, like, in that whole manifesty thing, and I remember talking to John about this, and I love how he filled in with the backstory. I was like, wow. He was like, when he made the decision for the things he wanted to manifest in his life and this all the success and everything, when he combined that with an intent to do good, that's when it just like went through the roof for him.
Wow. And not,
you know, that's where he said, what did he say? Something like that's when it galloped, or, you know, that's when it really took off.
Yeah.
And for him, it was being really in on the enviro
thing. Yeah.
But like,
yeah, I was there for that. We both were.
But I almost think that is a way of hedging your bets or finding a common ground between two ways of trying to be happy that are opposites, which is one is just having all the things that I want to occur and manifesting them and directing myself for them to occur. But the other is having as part of that dream for yourself, helping everybody else or helping other people, having that as an integral part of that dream.
And it's kind of exactly the same thing we were harking on about before, you know, with thinking of other people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, you've got to learn it. You can't, people could tell me that, you know, like John was probably telling me that, not personally, but like when I was 15 or 16 and I was frothing on you and John and Xavier and all of these roots artists, they were all kind of battering that message into us. You were all battering that message into us. But I had to do it 10 years later, 12 years later, I had to learn that for myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a funny little journey we go on to discover things that people could have told us anyway.
Oh, I've had that. My God, that's just frustrating to me. And this is just something that an old guy would have told me 20 years ago. But yeah, you've got the wisdom to see that you do need to go through those things, and I think that's where you can have gratitude for any hardship, whether that be, you know, like if you have your physical things taken care of and you're very successful, it might actually just be an internal hardship that you have to go through. But then would you say that it's sort of like internal for you, you had to go through some internal struggles to get to the place where you realize the truth of some of those things?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was just setting out with my own unreasonable expectations about what I could have for myself. And the hardship, I guess, or the failure that led to me learning a bit more was understanding that the fulfillment and the contentment I was looking for didn't actually come through those things. So whether or not I got them, you know, I was kind of back at square one. Like that had to be learned. It couldn't be taught. It couldn't be, it couldn't be explained. It just has to be learned. It's a feeling that comes from an experience.
And so learning that in your 20s and then to go out there and still chase the things that you want to achieve in life, but with that knowledge of what you've learned, surely that would transfer through your music and to another younger generation who might get it that little bit earlier.
Maybe. Yeah, that's a nice thought. I think it's definitely helped me write music that means something to me, which has been nice. It's therapeutic, and I think it's a better thing to offer people is music that comes from a place deep enough inside of myself that I get very emotional singing it and writing it, and the attainment of success gets in the way of all of that. I think, yeah, massively.
It makes it boring, doesn't it? It also brings, you need prosperity, you want to have prosperity
for sure,
those things are the bits that they do take away from it. It sounds like a cliche, but they do kind of take away from the arty bit,
the bit
that's fun, the main bit of it.
It's
the irony.
You can't, and like I had recorded an album a few years ago, and I probably worked on it for like 2 years, and you know, it's a semi-regular story recently with artists, but yeah, I spent a lot of money on it. I spent about 2 years working on it, and I ended up throwing the whole thing out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think I could do that. How did you do that?
Yeah. Well, I was so sick of it, and I was, and I could feel the anxiety running through it. And it was because the music before had a more success than things I'd had before.
Yeah, that really blew up that.
It had a bit more of a feeling of like buzz and excitement. I genuinely, I made music that I literally stitched fear into, so I had to put it down, and it was an enormous weight off my shoulders to put it down, like to forget about it, even though it was a massive sort of step back, and it took me a while actually to reconnect with writing music for myself. Like, unfortunately, I look back on a few years there, I don't even think I enjoyed playing music.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, you can imagine me sitting here and I've seen you come up in this, you know, amazing soloist and everything, and then think that, geez, time goes fast, that, you know, like, then you, and it's just like,
it does, yeah, doesn't it?
it's just the stage that you're here saying, oh yeah, I had this dark stage and you know, I wasn't enjoying it and whatever. It's just fuck.
Yeah.
Time moves so quickly. He already got to that stage.
You've already done that? It's a crazy realization to not. And I've heard surfers talk about it, especially when they talk about competitive surfing and like trying to get back to enjoying surfing. It's a wild concept. You know, it's part of, there's obviously pros and cons to every career path. And it's one of the few negative things about doing what you love for your job is fucking sometimes you stop loving it.
Yeah.
And you, sometimes you have to battle to get back to that and to understand like where you took a little wrong turn in your perspective or your attitude. And
yeah,
for me, it's often fear. It's often when I start, and I've learned that in every aspect of my life. Like I try to take a second with my decisions now to be like, am I making this decision based on a fear that I have? Or am I making this decision based on an interest / passion / excited, positive yearning towards something? And I try to do the second one. I mean, sometimes people will pull me up on it and be like, yeah, but you've got to be strategic with things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I think there's a certain element of strategy and kind of thinking things through and stuff, like, you know, oh, I'm gonna get insurance, and I'm getting insurance because I have a minimal fear that you know, I'm gonna fall off a cliff and break my leg. And that's probably smart, but like in general, I think that there were times where I was making a lot of decisions based on fear, like I'm afraid the radio is not going to play my music, so I'm going to do this, or, you know, I'm afraid of not getting music out quickly enough, so I'm going to record this quickly so I get it out there, or, you know, I'm afraid of telling somebody what I think because they might dislike me, or I'm afraid of being honest in a situation about what I need because I'm afraid that somebody's going to dislike me for it or think poorly of me. And in all of those regards, I've been trying to put fear aside and think like, I need this, and it would be great for me if I explained to this person that this is what I need. And you know, I don't owe them anything. And then I explain it and I get the great feeling of like, oh, I was honest and I've said what I needed, and they get it and they don't hate me or think I'm a jerk.
Even better.
Yeah.
But you can't... Yeah, I have exactly the same thing because I want to be the good guy.
Yeah.
And I hate to think of myself as an arsehole. That's sort of torture to me.
Yeah.
So, like... But somebody can tell me... They might not like what I've got to say and go, well, you're being an arsehole. And then I'll think, oh... Am I an asshole? Oh, damn it. And I'm uncomfortable. Yeah, I want to change it. But, you know, you can't control what somebody else thinks.
I know.
So that's a good... That's a really good insight.
Yeah. It's hard. Hey, but I think a lot of us that play music get into it because we're people pleasers. You know, my mum's a people pleaser.
Like, right, yeah.
She has a beautiful dedication to helping people feel good, and she's a counsellor.
So she's
in a field. But like, I feel like people pleasing is a pretty common trait in artists, and because we get on a stage and our job is basically to please everyone.
You want everyone to be happy.
Yeah.
Well, there's a million things that we can talk about. We haven't really even scraped the surface, but we'll have to do it again for sure. Yeah. If you would do,
absolutely.
That's so great. So, I wanted to ask you, for people who are listening, people have been getting a lot out of the podcast, and I know they'll get a lot out of this for sure. So, in terms of a daily practice, and this could be your ideal daily practice, because Danny's been getting into me after listening to my podcast. You're going on about meditating. Now, when have you been meditating? I'm like, I have, when I do my Wim Hof. You're talking about meditating. You were on a scooter in Bali. How much could that be meditating? Anyway, so it's so your idealized practice.
Yeah,
what do you think is good? Like, what would be good for people to do on a daily basis that leads to happiness, health, positive mindset?
Well, I think the gratitude one that we were talking about earlier, I think that's really important. I think that checking in with yourself in one way or another, whether it's meditation, or like, there are so many ways of getting that kind of meditation buzz check-in thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think listening to a podcast is one, to be honest. Like, there are podcasts that I listen to that serve that function for me. But
can you mention a couple?
The Blind Boy podcast.
Okay.
The Blind Boy podcast has... He's a rapper from a band called the Rubber Bandits, which is kind of this weird, absurd, ironic hip hop from Limerick in Ireland.
Right,
and
cool.
They wear plastic bags on their heads.
Yeah.
And they're trippers. They're total trippers.
Yeah.
And he's an absolute genius. Blind Boy Boat Club.
Right.
He talks a lot about everything from the history of colours of paint to like hot takes about the lead singer from Nirvana sort of getting his style of music from one of the Beach Boys who got punched in the throat and couldn't sing anymore. Like he goes on incredible tangents about all kinds of wild stuff. Listening to that for me is a form of meditation, and surfing is a form of meditation. And so you don't have to sit down and meditate if it feels weird to you or if it doesn't work. And there are even certain people with certain psychological conditions that should be careful of meditating kind of traditional way. So it's like,
say a little bit more about that theory, because I haven't even thought about that, but I heard somebody say it the other day and I thought, interesting.
Well, I don't know enough to talk about it, honestly.
It's too intense.
It's just there are psychological conditions in which trying to sit there and not allow thoughts into your head can be destructive for you. And so there's a million people in a million minds, and not everybody. Not meditation is not going to work for everybody.
It's like doing weights with a bad back.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah,
it's too much.
Yeah, there's all, and everybody kind of knows. But that sort of check in with yourself moment where you feel yourself come down from a high gear sort of. And I think for a lot of people, just watching some Netflix in the evening does it. But it's those kinds of things that you need to check in with yourself every day, I think, some way or another. Or you begin to sort of shoot and spiral into modes of behavior and into thought processes that are uncontrollable and inevitably destructive in the end. So I think like checking in with yourself is really important on a day-to-day basis. Getting enough sleep, I think, is important. Like there's no way around it. Like it's a basic sort of boring, silly one, but like I really think getting enough sleep is important.
Especially the old what do they call it, the hour of the wolf or something, like 3 o'clock in the morning or something.
Yes, you'd be awake for that.
I did hear a podcast where they're saying the hour of the wolf's great. This is derailing everything that we're talking about though, but like, you know, people used to, when they used to get to bed though, as soon as it was dark, so 6 o'clock or something, then they get up at the hour of the wolf, do a bit of hunting, and then go back to bed again. But if you wake up and just lay in bed at that time, that can be a great time for paranoia.
For sure, yeah.
And for overthinking and going in circles.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how that happens, hey?
Interrupting that is a good idea. Like interrupting the paranoia.
Yeah, 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 for
but
sure.
I think what you're talking about that seems to come up in my podcast a lot, and it did come up in the book a bit too, is just like putting spaces in your... putting spaces in your mental stream is just...
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Putting spaces in it so that you can accurately understand where it's at.
Yeah.
Whether it's building into this, you know, psychotic, anxious kind of overpowering sort of stream of thoughts, or whether it's like a reasonable amount, because like none of us can stop thinking, we can't.
No, but just to remember that you're having thoughts.
Yeah, exactly.
That
they're
not you.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
the epiphany, I guess.
Yeah. So I think like that, sleep, some form of creativity. I think everybody needs some form of creativity in their day-to-day life. I think that's about it.
Exercise?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's funny that I didn't bring that up, but I sort of forget that surfing's exercise, so I forget
that.
Yeah,
yeah, it keeps you so fit, but you're like so driven to do it.
Yeah.
Frothing so hard.
Yeah.
I just think surfing is just like such a perfect thing in that.
Yeah.
That it draws you to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't help do it.
Yeah.
And then it's so good for you.
I know, yeah, it's sick, isn't it? It's so good. But yeah, exercise, absolutely. It's one thing I struggle with on tour when I can't surf. Is like, and I just do a lot of yoga. And I try to do like sort of physical yoga that gives me that sort of heightened heart rate and all that kind of stuff.
Oh wow.
But yeah, like exercise is phenomenal really, isn't it? Like, and that's what John was talking about as well, wasn't
it? You're chasing the crazy man.
I love that so
much.
Yeah,
people have been telling me about that quote. They love it. I love it too. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. So yeah, exercise is, God, I can't imagine a life without any exercise, but that's for me at least, that's like a very pivotal part of not getting lost in a mental world. Keeping that in the body, physical presence, and exercise.
The body likes that, and I think the subconscious likes that too. Like when you're exercising, it's probably like subconsciously you're giving the body some hardship, something to work with, some work to do, some things to be solved, whether it's lifting a weight or going for a run or surfing. It's
a
like
bit of
something to overcome. You're giving your body some struggle.
Yeah,
so it's sort of like that's how we started this podcast, thinking about the lack of struggle.
Yeah,
it's like you're giving your body a regular bit of struggle to push against, and I think your body appreciates it, and your subconscious mind probably appreciates it
too. And I think that's massive. Oh, and laughter.
Yeah,
I think like sometimes I'll spend like half a day just kicking around with friends doing not much, you know, and then like part of me will feel a bit guilty that I just spent so much time, you know, fucking around. But then another part of me is like, we were laughing so much, we're having such a good time, and I know that that's doing something good for me, like that laughter and you know, like I think laughter is a really important part of every day, like finding some kind of way to laugh and be jovial, you know, to connect with your inner kid.
That's true, and that there's a lot of studies about that with longevity and stuff like that, that you know, it actually makes you live longer to have friends and to have a happy outlook, and
you
know, people live, I don't know, there's a lot of, I've read that many times in different ways, you know.
Yeah,
I wish I could quote it right now, that you live 7 years longer from laughter, but it seems to be one of those ones that we need, and human connection. And I think if you focus too much on just getting your goals, which, you know, you then people start to fall away. You don't have time for them.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm putting laughter up there. I think sometimes laughter's, 2 hours of laughing my head off with some mates is better than 2 hours of any other form of practice.
That's really cool. Well, thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate it. And thanks for coming good with the alternative. We've recorded this podcast on some really good recording gear instead of the normal way, but I really appreciate it, bro, and just really good luck on your musical journey. You're a legend, and you're doing good things and good things for people out there.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks for having me on. It's an honour.
And I was walking one day through the big lights, wondering when the world became so tired. Bottles of vodka flashed as a Coca-Cola sign shone like moonlight. And I wondered when the world became so white. Even the clearing of the streets, it was all tiled. And in the corner stood a tree in a cage. And in the screen on the side of a skyscraper stood a war child, nestled in amongst the stocks, the shares, and the sports scores of the day.
Really appreciated that, and I just feel really lucky at this point to be doing Soulful Conversations, and I'm yet to have a guest not open up and be perfectly honest and candid and really bare their soul in, and you would expect no less. I think that was the good thing about naming it Soulful Conversations. So everybody, keep on sending me direct messages and communicating. I met somebody in the servo the other day who had been talking to me. Who is it? Simple Ben, I think his handle was, who's given me some feedback. He wanted the podcast to be longer. And here you have it, Benny boy. They are longer. So, I'm just really enjoying having that feedback from people. And a lot of people have let me know that they've found these conversations to be really helpful, and that is perfect. That is the idea. That is what makes me so excited to be doing this. And every one of these episodes does take a long time to do, and it's a fair bit of work and a fair bit of effort. But at no point have I ever questioned doing this. It just feels like the total right thing to be doing, and I'm learning so much from it. So thank you very much. Don't forget to go to Earth Bottles and use the code AshLovesMe if you want 10% off some eco goodies there, that being bottles, cool coffee cups, cool straws, produce bags, all things that put an end to the dreaded single-use plastic. And you can use also the AshLovesMe code at my merch site for my music. And the good thing about that is you can get my rad boardies that are made from plastic bottles, no less. I'm very proud of them. They're very cool. Okay, over and out. Thank you very much.